case for today, and that is U.S. versus Embry. Mr. Daly?
May it please the Court, my name is Anthony Delier, and I represent Carlton Embry. Mr. Embry objected to the use of the guidelines at his sentencing because he believed at that time that they were used not as advisory guidelines, but as a mandatory guideline sentence. He objected because he thought that 3553A required the court to consider a sentence sufficient but not greater than necessary. Very briefly, I would like to point the court to just a couple of statements in the record. The court set the parameters on C-10 of the appendix. The court actually said that it would not sentence outside of the guidelines. And as far as counsel is aware, Judge Baz never has sentenced outside of the guidelines. The court further went on to explain that he discounted all of the experts, including the Sentencing Commission, and he believed that until Congress told him differently, the guidelines would be, and I'm paraphrasing, the only appropriate sentencing in this case. Mr. Embry also objected to the use of the career offender guidelines because second only to the 100-to-1 ratio of the crack to cocaine, it is the least substantiated of all of the work done by the United States Sentencing Commission. And finally, he objected to the fact that the court included a gang affiliation, albeit alleged, in his pre-sentence report. He asked that it be struck, and the court declined to rule.
He said he wouldn't take that into consideration, didn't he?
I'm sorry?
Didn't he say he would not take that into consideration?
Right. However, the Bureau of Prisons does consider this. I think that common sense would suggest that there can be no other modifier to a person's sentence that would be more harmful than
but he,
that.
But he didn't conclude that that was an accurate characterization of him, did he?
That's true.
I don't know. Why would it, the fact that even if the Bureau of Prisons took it into consideration, or at least as an allegation that he was a member of that, how would that adversely affect him? Apart, I understand the problem of other people finding out about it and rival gang members, but how would the Bureau of Prisons as an institution, how would that adversely affect him?
I can give you one good example, sir. If there's a riot at, say, FCI Oxford, where he would happen to be in the future, and it happened to be, let's say, between Mexicans and blacks, the first thing the Bureau of Prisons does is take out all the gang members of either race. They immediately ship them. So he could go from the place closest to where he lives to California by this mere mention of a gang affiliation. And the Bureau of Prisons has, and it's not in the record here, but the Bureau of Prisons has a very concise and extensive record regarding all of the gang affiliations. They have various levels. And he wouldn't be in the hardcore gang affiliation, which would result in, you know, higher security levels at every stage of his incarceration. However, if there ever is an incident and they decide to move all the gang members, he would be one of those people. I realize that this is, you know, one of those things that may or may not happen, but with a sentence this long, I think there's a real possibility that it will, and I think that it's substantial enough that it should be weighed against the indica of reliability. In this case...
I'm sorry for interrupting, but isn't the initial placement decision, doesn't a gang affiliation have some bearing on that for the Bureau of Prisons as well?
It does. The gang affiliation next to being a sex offender is probably the worst thing that could happen to an inmate. And the thing that makes this problematic is, you know, this is something where Mr. Embry addressed this and I think virtually proved that this allegation was inaccurate, and yet the court left this in. I think that an indicia of reliability should be required for anything in a pre-sentence investigation report that is going to essentially control the next 20-some years of his life.
But doesn't Mr. Embry have some means at the Bureau of Prisons to challenge determinations made on something like this?
He has the means to do it, but not the ability, Your Honor. When I say that, what I mean to say is there's no one will appoint counsel to him. He's literate, but not exceptionally literate. And quite honestly, the BP 9 through 13 system that he would be looking to would eventually lead back to the courts were he able to do that. But another one of the real-life considerations that I hope the court will consider is inmates that file these sorts of forms and do these sorts of appeals are seen as troublemakers. And these are also the kinds of things that cause problems down the road.
Are you claiming that his rights under Rule 32 of the Federal Criminal Procedure were violated by the judge's failure to make a determination on this?
Yes. I believe that the court is required, once that a defendant has rebutted something in the pre-sentence investigation, I believe that the law requires him to exercise his discretion, make a ruling. And I think that the only reasonable ruling in this case would have been that the gang affiliation was not proven. And it came from nothing more than a gentleman involved in the case saying, well, I believe that he wore this gang-related medallion. And we provided the court, and it's in the appendix, with a substantial amount of information that would show that that would not be the gang affiliation, that medallion is not a proper medallion for someone in that particular gang. And, in fact, we were unable to find any gang that it would be affiliated with after a substantial amount of effort. And the government, I think, will rightly say, but we had this informant, and he was right about so many things. How could the court not believe this? I'm not saying, and never did say, that that informant was dishonest. I'm saying that he made a mistake. And I think that the court should be required to rule on that as a matter of law so that we have a record on appeal. I think that the exercise of discretion that the district court is required in order to allow this court to exercise its discretion. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, first things first, I respectfully submit that in this case, a limited remand under Kimbrough is also appropriate just to deal with the crack cocaine part of it. The crack cocaine in this case came out higher than the career offender, so consequently more or less trumped the base offense level. So I think it is appropriate for the reasons we've discussed already this morning. Turning then, unless there are any questions on that, I will turn to this business about the gang affiliation. I know that Mr. Delier has raised two other issues. Unless there are questions about those, I won't get into those. But this alleged gang affiliation, I respectfully submit that the district court did not err in declining to strike the alleged gang affiliation for two reasons. Number one, as Mr. Delier says, the allegation is based on information from Antoine Deal, and Mr. Dale, Deal had proven reliable about a number of things, and I talk about those in the brief. Mr. Delier indicates that being identified as a member or alleged member of a gang might be the worst thing that could happen to a person in the Bureau of Prisons. I think we have to look at the other side of the coin. It very much can be the best thing that could happen to a person if, in fact, Mr. Embry is a member of this Blackstone gang. Then the very last thing he would want was to be placed in a population with a group of individuals who regard Blackstone members as their enemies. So, you know, it theoretically could be a very positive thing for Mr. Embry as well. So I respectfully disagree. And then whether or not this medallion is of a panther is indicative of the Blackstones group, I respectfully submit, and I appreciate how hard Mr. Jallier worked and he gathered all that information, but, you know, these uniforms aren't like the United States Army where they're going to stay the same over time. I respectfully submit that they are more fluid than Mr. Delier may appreciate. And for, you know, Mr. Embry's little, you know, stretch of Chicago before he came to Madison, the Panther may have been very much an emblem. And I don't think, you know, Mr. Delier, with all due respect, has rebutted that. But more importantly, I don't think Mr. Delier's claim on Mr. Embry's behalf is ripe because it is contingent upon future events that may or may not come to pass. We have no idea whether the Bureau of Prisons will consider this allegation in making any decisions relative to Mr. Embry. Attributing causation to the allegation is particularly thorny for Mr. Embry. Keep in mind, this gentleman is a large-scale crack dealer. He had a gun. He's a career offender, long history of narcotics and violence. I would think that Bureau of Prisons will deal with Mr. Embry quite carefully, and he will be in a relatively secure institution for much of his 20-plus years. So I respectfully submit that the issue simply is not ripe for adjudication if he finds it to have been to his detriment. There is a separate process that he can tackle then. So that's all for the United States. Any questions or concerns?
No, Mr. Jay, thank you. You have 3 minutes, Mr. Dunn.
Mr. Embry met his burden in the rebuttal of the evidence provided by the government, and he has shown that it is materially untrue, inaccurate, or unreliable for him to be found as a gang member. In a case that was remarkably similar is United States v. Puig Infante, that's Puiginfante, 19 F3rd 929 at 943. It's a Fifth Circuit case. It's apparently not that common of an issue. But I just wanted to talk briefly about one of the things Mr. O'Shea said. While it is true that Mr. Embry could attempt to go through the administrative remedy process to challenge this gang affiliation, I think the court probably realizes how difficult it would be for the Bureau of Prisons to essentially remove something that a federal judge has had placed in someone's file. But of more significance is they're not doing a favor, because one of the few things that the Bureau of Prisons is really good about is somebody says, I'm scared, I can't be here anymore, they do what is known as rolling them up, and they pack their bags and they put them in protective custody and they move them to another facility. And so were, in fact, Mr. Embry a member of this gang, that would be the most sure and effective way for him to be protected. And I just briefly wanted to touch on Kimbrough as far as our objections at the district court regarding the career offender. It is, in fact, true that Mr. Embry's case, the crack cocaine is the ultimate force that decided his sentence, but we are challenging not only the 3-to-1 ratio, but the underlying career offender. And so we would ask that this court send this back for a full resentencing. Thank you.
Thank you, Celia. And you were appointed counsel in this case, were you not? You have the thanks of the court again for your vigorous representation of your client. Thank you. We move to...